Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Jean Day is my special guest today, and she's got a lot of cool things to say to ex-offenders. You want to be sure and stay tuned. Jean Day, right after this, I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Hey there, got an idea for a story or a guest here on Journey of Hope? Drop me a line and I will definitely check it out. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Jean Day. She's a therapist, and we're going to talk with her today about addictions and what addictions are and relapse prevention. Jean, welcome to the Journey of Hope.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Can you start off by giving us a little bit of your background so we know where it is you're coming from? Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jean.
Sure. I graduated with my bachelor's back in 97 and with a bachelor's in psychology, got my master's from Pepperdine University in 2000. And basically, I've been working in the field of psychology for the past 17 years. I had a private practice as a mental health therapist. I now don't do private practice anymore, but I am a college professor and teaching psychology now.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you'll be able to answer this question with no problem then. Tell us exactly what an addiction is. And before you do this, let me just say that, you know, there are a lot of people that think, well, I mean, I guess they can be social drinkers, right? And maybe just smoke a little pot once a month. Those are not addicts, or are they?
Well, there's a difference. And actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there's an addiction and then there's a habit.
Okay.
And I want to talk about what an addiction is. An addiction is you have a psychological or physical component. This is where the person is unable to control the aspects of the addiction without help because of the mental and physical conditions involved. So there's a physiological response. They start to experience withdrawal when they try to reduce the amount of substance that they're taking in. They build a tolerance for it, which means that they require larger doses of the substance in order to get the desired effect. That's an addiction. Now, a habit is done by choice. And by that, I mean the person with the habit can choose to stop and will stop if they want to. When they decide they don't want to do it anymore, they can stop and with no trouble at all. And the physiological, psychological component is not an issue with addiction, with a habit.
Okay. All right. Now, so someone who has beaten an addiction and has been sober for a long period of time, can they, let's say that they were an alcoholic, okay, or they are an alcoholic, haven't drank in 10 years, and now all these states are beginning to, lighten up these marijuana laws, should that person stay away from smoking the occasional joint? Once an addict, always an addict. Does it work like that? Talk to us about that.
Well, there's different theories about that, but I tend to err on the side of caution.
Okay.
I believe that if you have an addiction, especially to a substance, that it is better to err on the side of caution and not use any other mood-altering substances.
All right. Okay.
Because it eventually leads you back to your drug of choice, alcohol or other drugs.
Okay, so you know that primarily this show is the audience of this show, the demographic is ex-offenders and people that are their friends and loved ones and so forth. So the advice you're giving us here today is important. And so what about this? What if, let's say, I'm addicted to running? Is that bad?
It becomes bad if you cannot control it, if it becomes obsessive.
Okay.
To the point where you can't function in your day-to-day life unless you run.
Okay.
Now, running is considered a healthy outlet.
Right.
But running can be addictive for people. For example, people that have eating disorders, they often run excessively.
Okay.
You know, they eat a meal and then they feel like they have to run it off. And so in that case, that would be considered an addiction.
So, but let me just interrupt you there. Is obsessive behavior, is that the same thing as an addiction?
Yes. Obsession is a part of addiction.
Okay.
Because you start obsessing about how to get the substance, how much you need to use, and start basically rearranging your life according to getting that substance or that addiction thing that you need. And that can go for any addiction. I'm focusing on substances, but it can be for any addiction. It can be for sex addiction.
Right.
If someone has an addiction to running, if they have an addiction to food, it's basically once they start, they absolutely cannot stop.
Okay. Since you brought it up, I don't want to go too far down this road, but how common is sexual addictions? Are you talking about pornography? Or are you talking about hanging out in the bar and picking people up? I mean, how common is that? And is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's part of it. But basically, sex addiction is just like any other addiction. Once they get started, they can't stop. They have cravings. They have urges. There's a cycle to their addiction. And once they get started, they cannot control themselves. And they use it to excess, even though it's damaging to their daily life.
Okay. Interferes with relationships.
So it can be an addiction. People can have an addiction to pornography where they, you know, have to watch pornography all throughout the day, and it starts to interfere. A key warning sign is when it starts to interfere with your daily functioning. That's when you know that you're kind of crossing that threshold from something that might have been a habit to something that's becoming an addiction.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you, you know, how do you know that you're not a social drinker anymore? You know, how do you know? Is it because you can't stop, or because it's interfering with your daily activities? It's all of those things, right?
Yeah, it's actually a lot of things, and I'll give you some of the signs of addiction.
Okay.
First of all, the person takes the substance, they cannot stop. They experience what they call withdrawal symptoms when they try to reduce or don't have access to the substance. So they might experience things like excessive moodiness, cravings, depression, insomnia, things like that. So they start to experience some withdrawal, and the addiction... This is a key part, too. The addiction continues despite health problems awareness. When that person starts to recognize that it's having a physiological effect on their body, where they might start experiencing health issues, but they cannot stop using the substance, then they've crossed over into addiction.
Okay. All right. Now, we're going to take a real quick break. We're just getting started here, Gene. We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back with Gene Day and more of our discussion on addiction right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey there, is everybody all right? I hope so. Let me know your success stories. Let me know the problems and the issues that you're running into in your post-incarceration life, and I'll be sure and try to address those things on the show. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Drop me a line. We're talking with Jean Day. Jean is talking with us about addiction. She's a college professor, and this is the kind of thing you teach in your psychology classes, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. Talk to us about, you brought up the word cycle. Now, I've heard about this, and I've actually done some reading on this. Tell us about the cycle. What are the pieces of the cycle? How does that work?
Well, first the person starts thinking about going to old places where they used to use the substance. They may start planning how to go about getting the substance.
Okay.
And that all takes place before they actually relapse.
Okay.
There's that whole cycle of thinking about it, craving it, and starting to think. They start thinking thoughts like, oh, I could probably go to a bar. I've been sober for 5 years. I can go to a bar and sit down with my friends and talk and not want to have a drink. That is something that would be considered someone that's in the cycle of relapse.
Okay. And there are also ways to arrest that cycle, right? There are
right.
ways to teach people to identify. That's what I want to talk about today. So
okay.
How do we stop that cycle from spinning into to a point where the person acts on these thoughts? What are some techniques to stop that cycle?
Well, first of all, I want to backtrack because, you know, I know that your audience are recently incarcerated individuals.
Right.
I want to say that typically relapse occurs with them due to their lack of social support, and they mm-hmm. go back to their old environment, so they have exposure in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
They have inadequate economic resources, mm-hmm. poor housing, unemployment, interpersonal relationships, and lack of good health care. And so for recently incarcerated individuals, relapse they're at a high risk once released from prison.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of offenders, you know, myself included, had an addiction prior to incarceration. And the addiction may have been so severe that that's what cost them their freedom. And so you could go years and years and years, in my case, 7 years, 11 months, and 23 days. And you can come home, and even though you've had all these years of sobriety from whatever the addiction may be, it's easy to get back into it, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, with all these things you're talking about, like, you know, all these risk factors that you're talking about when you get out, man, isn't it easy to just say, oh, screw it, I'm going to smoke a joint?
Exactly. Exactly. And there are lots of situations that can lead to relapse. You can, the person might have experienced the loss of a loved one. They may have financial changes due to lack of employment. They may have changes in their employment. Maybe they got demoted or promoted. Even promoted might cause substance addiction again. And then they have all these social pressures as conflict. and then they may have change in their marital status. Maybe they're having marital difficulties because they've been incarcerated for so long, and now they're back trying to work on their relationship. So they may have relationship and marital issues, and they may simply have boredom. Boredom is a big trigger for relapse.
Yeah, I think downtime can be dangerous, and we talk about that here on the show.
Yeah, it's a big trigger, not having enough activity. And as you know, like people that are reintegrating and assimilating and trying to get back out there, they may not have a strong social network. And so, you know, they may spend a great amount of time alone in isolation. And so those thoughts start running through their head. You know what? I'll just smoke a joint real quick, but I can control it. And that's also part of the addiction, the denial mm-hmm. that you have the problem. Mm-hmm. I once heard a saying when I was working with an addict that said, alcoholism and drug addiction are the only diseases that convince you that you don't have one.
Okay. Let's back up just a little bit. Who is susceptible to addiction? Is it every single person, or is it people that maybe have had a trauma in their life? Or I've heard this idea of men in particular who have these legitimate unmet needs from childhood that they're very susceptible to addicting or being addicted to drugs and alcohol. Is there a type of person that it's easier to get addicted than other people? I don't know if I'm saying that right.
you're very clear about it. And actually, my answer is all of the above.
Really?
You can have people that have trauma in their history and that lead them down the road to substance abuse. You can have people who just genetically, they found that the addiction gene is passed down through generations.
So there is there's an actual addiction gene?
Yes.
Wow.
That's how they created the disease model, is that there's actually a gene that if you have that gene and you ingest that first substance, you take that first drink or that first hit of a joint, that you're automatically addicted from the get-go. You almost don't have a choice. You almost don't have a choice in that.
Okay. All right. So I'm starting to have these kind of thinking error thought, these strange thoughts of, you know, kind of delusional thinking about, I'm going to drink three beers. I'm going to drink three beers. I'm going to smoke two joints. I'm going to take this pill or that pill, and then I'm not going to do it anymore. I just want to feel good. You know what I'm talking about. These kinds of thoughts that you were saying that lead to a relapse in the cycle. Okay. And we had mentioned earlier about arresting those. Can you give me some specific techniques to keep from acting on those thoughts?
Well, first of all, I have to say, with relapse prevention, you can't do it alone.
Okay.
And
are you a believer in 12 steps, or is that a good thing? Or I am. What do you think?
I am an advocate for 12 steps. Mm-hmm. I am an advocate for going into rehab. Mm-hmm. The 12 steps, I think, helps with the sense that people connect with a sponsor, and so they start to establish a connection with a human being that understands where they've been mm-hmm. and that they can call or reach out to, or that person can come to their home and they can say, hey, you know what? I'm really struggling today. I've been craving this alcohol all day. What can I do? And mm-hmm. that person may just sit and process with them.
Okay,
but thing is, you can't fight addiction alone. And part of the secrecy of it part of the secrecy is what keeps you in the addiction. Mm-hmm. So if you find yourself wanting to hide it from the other people in your life, you want to isolate and don't want to be around other people, that's a definite warning sign that you're in addiction mode.
I guess especially for people that that have a sex addiction, because, I mean, hell, it's embarrassing to talk about with someone else. So
exactly.
Right. So
so I would say for relapse prevention, don't try to do it alone. Interact with people that can provide the moral support and understanding of the issues that you're feeling. But also, more importantly, you need to learn how to recognize your relapse warning signs. Okay. Recognize the emotional triggers. Mm-hmm. If depression is an emotional trigger for you and you know, when I get depressed, I want to drink more. Okay, mm-hmm. Then you need to up the amount of meetings that you're going to. You need to reach out to your sponsor, to your family, to other close people that you can trust and confide in. And you need to increase your social situations. Go be around other people. Increase your social activity. And then also take on a hobby. Take on an extra hobby. Go to the gym. Go jogging. Go for a walk. Do activities that stimulate the body.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. What role does... It sounds to me like, you know, people that relapse, it doesn't sound to me, I know this, that people are having a hard time dealing with stress.
Right.
And so they lean on the addiction instead of having the proper coping skills. So how does somebody how does a 55-year-old man or woman who's just been released from incarceration, they're not taught coping skills in prison, no matter what program they've gone through, how do they obtain those skills that they don't have yet in their life? What would you like to say about that, and what advice would you give about that?
First of all, I know a lot of people that don't respond to the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. I want to say my first inclination is to say go to an AA or NA, Narcotics Anonymous meeting, immediately, and at the end of the meeting, they usually say, please, people, raise your hand if you're interested in being a sponsor, and so you can reach out to that sponsor. But if you find that you're going to meetings and you're still wanting to use the substance and you're still using the substance, then I say it's time to seek a rehab treatment.
Okay. All right. Jean, we haven't really gotten to everything I wanted to get to, but we're out of time. My guest today has been Jean Day. Jean, you're going to have to come back and talk to us some more about this.
Absolutely.
Very important.
Absolutely.
And I want everybody to know that my new friend Jean here sent me more emails than any other guest that has ever been on the Journey of Hope. She gets the trophy.
I apologize.
No, that's great. I just want people to know how focused and serious you are. And good luck with your teaching situation. And let's be in touch. And I'd like to get you back on. We're going to take another break real quick. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. A whole lot of cool shows coming up in the late spring, early summer, already booked and ready to go. And if you know someone who is coming home from prison, other than yourself or a family or a loved one knows someone that's going to be coming home this summer or this spring, be sure and tell them about the Journey of Hope, okay? And you can always let me know how you're doing at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Hello there. I want to thank my special guest, Gene Day, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.